You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Courtney Boyer. I gotta say, I think y'all are gonna love this conversation. Courtney and I discuss her making the decision with herself to be honest and deconstruct her early self-concepts around being good. We talk about marriage, family, religious upbringing, domestic labor, sex, and pleasure. What's wonderful about this conversation is that Courtney is not just aware and embracing of who she is today. She's very pragmatic and matter-of-fact about talking about it, and it makes a really endearing conversation. She's a therapist, so she's got all the right vocabulary and things to talk about it. She's done so much work on her own honesty that at one point in this conversation, I asked her to tell me more about being honest. And she's like, I'm going to need some more information. That could mean a lot of stuff in my life. What would you like to know? So are you ready? Let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Courtney Boyer, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am so ready.
So fun. I have just my regular two warm-up questions to kick off this conversation. What part of the world do you call home?
Germany.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And tell us something that you love or like about where you live.
I love how safe it is and how beautiful so much beautifulness is easy to access around us.
Fantastic. All right. So very good. I could talk to you all day about Germany, but Courtney, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're going to talk about a time in your life, your personal discovery around good, being good, or goodness, and mm-hmm. what changes happened in your life as a result of that discovery process. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. So here we go. You shared that as a therapist and as a wife, you spent years doing everything right. And we'll put that right in the quotation mm-hmm. marks. So can we talk about when this was happening in your life and what mm-hmm. that means?
Sure. So I grew up in the evangelical Christian church. I got married at 22 because sex outside of marriage was like one of the worst things that you could do. And being the supportive, doting human giver as a wife was really the charge that we as young girls and later young women were given. And so I did that. I did all the quote right things. I supported my husband through med school and took care of all the cooking, cleaning, finances, child rearing, staying at home while also doing my own schooling and my own business. And so that started pretty early in my early to mid 20s.
All right. So that is very interesting. And so evangelical Christian upbringing, did you grow up in Germany? I'm going to wonder whether.
No, I grew up in the U.S. Okay. Yeah, I grew up in the U.S. and then we've been here for 6.5 years.
Yeah, because I think of evangelical Christianity as being a very U.S.-centered thing. But
yes.
I admit when I say, you could have told me I was totally wrong with that because I've never questioned that idea.
There are pockets, as I've shared my story on social media, there are people who, even in Germany and parts of the UK, have similar kind of purity culture backgrounds. But yeah, the majority has been in the U.S.
So, and they might call it something different, I guess,
would be
the thing. All right. So you grow up in what would you consider this? So I'll ask you this instead of assuming. Some people who talk about evangelical Christian upbringings will actually look back and say that they grew up in what we now call a high control situation, a high control religion. Is that fair for me to say? Okay.
That is, I would say it's accurate.
Okay. So you grow up in a high control religion setting. And which for people who may not have heard that combination of words kind of means that you were in a situation where there's a really clear directive from the adults in the community around you of what the rules of being accepted in that community are. That makes sense that it shapes your definition of good, bad, woman, man, wife, all of those things. You get young, you get married at 22, which is not super young, but is younger mm-hmm. than in some things. When did you decide to become a therapist?
So I went and got a master's in education in human sexuality when I was 23, I think 23 or 24. And then when I was doing sex education, I would have people come and ask me really personal therapeutic questions that I just didn't feel comfortable answering because I wasn't clinically trained. And so then I went and got a master's in mental health counseling and graduated in 2011. Was
So
that?
I will admit that the evangelical upbringing and sex therapy, what those that's not something that I would have paired together.
Not at all. Nope.
Okay. All right. So I wondered, I was like, was that I did not expect that. I didn't you because I didn't know if maybe there was a shift in a sequence. Okay, so you become a therapist, you're married, you're going through this, you have this concept of good. They're very strong concepts in some high control Christian places around the responsibility of sex, the job of being a woman. Purity culture is one that you mentioned. How did you get into the field of sex therapy? Like, how did that become something that matched your lived experience? Tell me this story because I'm very, very curious how you go from, purity culture to sex therapy.
I saw sex as an opportunity that Christians were missing. Like I was like, man, God made this amazing gift that, married couples can experience, and we're doing such a bad job of claiming that and taking it from the world, quote unquote. And so I was like, I want to be part of the solution. I want to help people have these conversations and normalize, sex being a good thing, within the context of Christianity that they can enjoy. And so I need to be educated to do that.
All right, so at this point, you're still very committed, and you could still be
Oh,
today.
yeah.
So you're still very committed to the rules and the community around your faith. And then at some point, you begin to notice for yourself what you refer to as a quiet erosion. So you're still in your mid-20s when you're going through this education. You're very sex positive for married couples. When do you begin to notice this quiet erosion?
I think the first shift was when I think it was in California when they voted on gay marriage and they voted it down. And this was like in the late O's,
The aughts,
2008, 9. Yeah, the
yeah.
aughts, thank you. And I just remember thinking, like, who cares if gay people want to get married? Like, and that was really the crut, like the erosion, the slow avalanche that began of questioning a lot of the principles around sexuality that I had been taught.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, I do not think that would have been a popular sentiment probably within your
Oh no,
fellowship at the time.
I'll never forget. I posted that actually on Facebook and was like, what is it? Who cares? Like, really, like, does it matter? And I lost a lot of friends. Like, they just unfollowed me, like, or unfriended me or whatever on Facebook. And I was like, why? I didn't understand. And I think that that's when I started to realize that my views were not fully aligned with most mainstream Christianity.
So that and so that's when the stepping away from the rules that you were given as a member of the flock happened. Did that quiet erosion bleed into, other parts of your life, or was it really just a part of the stepping away from some parts of the faith?
I would say it was more of like a deconstruction. So I started to deconstruct my faith, but still practiced it, still raised my kids in it. My kids, we put them in a Christian school. We got them baptized. When we moved to Germany, I would say that that's really, so in 2019, right before COVID, that's really when my faith started to, and I started to really start to pull back because we could only find evangelical churches here, and we had found like a United Methodist church at our last place that we lived, and it was liberal and we loved it. And so it was hard to reconcile the very conservative beliefs, the lack of women in leadership at these churches here in Germany, they're American churches, with what we had come from. And my girls were starting to hit preteen, teenage, and they're starting to go to youth group and being taught like, okay, well, this is what the women do. They were like, this doesn't make sense with what we've been taught about, feminism and what it is to be equal and stuff. So that's when I was like, oh, this is not working.
So that makes sense. So we when we talk, let's talk a little bit about because I've had several conversations with people about religion and their complicated relationships with it. But let's make sure that we talk about it so that everybody who's in the audience knows the things that we're talking about. Because you used a word that is very commonly used for this complicated relationship, which is deconstructing. And so what is that? I'm not referring to you as like the end all be all expert of this, but share with us how you would describe what that really means to somebody who's looking in from the outside. Like why, you know, because it is a weird thing, even if you're talking about food, like it's like deconstructed mac and cheese. Like, what is this?
You know? Right, right. It's an examination of each part and parcel of a belief system or a mac and cheese recipe or whatever. So for me, I was deconstructing my relationship with Christianity as a religion, my relationship with God, and looking at each of those fundamental beliefs, like hell, for example, or, you know, salvation, Jesus being the Messiah, those, like looking at each of those individually. And why do I believe that? Where does that come from? What if I didn't believe that? What would that mean? That's what it means for me.
That makes sense. And so as a part of this, you mentioned, so there's an overlap. Let me frame this the best way I can. There's an overlap between community, culture, family, congregation. And so when you deconstruct, sometimes when you deconstruct, you mentioned that you lost some online acquaintances and friends. It sounds like you also, when you were in the States, you changed congregations to be more ideologically involved. Did it impact any of your relationships, other relationships in your family?
Not in my family. I would say my parents were progressing the same way that I was. My sister had left the faith when she was like 18. And so that wasn't ever, you know, something she was interested in coming back to. But I would say the people that stayed, that I went to a small Christian school. And so the people that I graduated with, a lot of them stayed in the local area and still believe what we were taught as kids. And so I don't have a relationship with them, especially now.
And your husband and your kids, they were on this journey with you. This was something that you were going through sort of as a family?
Yes and no. I would say yes in some aspects for my kids. We raised them pretty much Christian until about my oldest was probably 13, 12 or 13. And then here in Germany, they went to a public school here. And in Germany, you declare like what religion you are when you go to public school. It's super interesting.
Wow.
And so because they have a religion class, so they either put you in Protestant, Catholic, or ethics. And ethics are for like the atheists, agnostics, Hindus, Muslims, basically anybody who's not, you know, wants to do Christian. And so we had them in the Protestant classes and stuff. But then as they got older, some, you know, if they were, what my oldest was like, I want to go to ethics. I don't want to do Protestant anymore. And so we let them choose their path as opposed to choosing it for them until they were able to leave the house.
Wow. That's the first time anybody's told me that that is one of the ways that the education is handled. It is a very different relationship with organized religion. And that makes sense. It's one of those things that you never know what it's going to be. All right. So you said on your pitch that you were, and you hinted to this earlier, you at the time of this beginning of this quiet erosion, you were fluent in caretaking and self-sacrifice. So thinking back to that time, see if you can tell us a little bit more about what that time in your life felt like.
It felt very small. It felt very restricted. It felt very empty and performing.
Okay.
So a lot of it was my job. Like I had three kids under four. So they were 0, 2, and 4. And my husband was in med school, residency, fellowship. And so he wasn't very helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some spouses that are helpful regardless of their vocation. Mine was not. He was very focused on his career and was like, well, you can take care of the kids and I'll help eventually.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's what you do. Like women just do all the things and we sacrifice our own needs and desires. And I never did anything for myself, like other than go to Target, like to go walk around. I was like, that was the highlight, you know, like there was no mom's night outs. There was no girls weekends. Like I was, I did, you know, kept the household afloat and my husband got to coast.
Yeah. Are you still married to the same person?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to be sure that I understood the story. So sometimes what we call this division of household labor. And it can be a very hotly contested topic. People have very strong opinions on it. It's absolutely one of those weird things about, the human experience that two people can be living in the very same space and have a very different version of what is going on. And it's, domestic division of labor is definitely something that that I have talked about for a long time. But like I tell people, my husband is similar to yours in that he's or maybe he's like blind to it. Like I put the documentary Fair Play on the TV and he watched it with me and he still didn't get the hint. So, and I was like, really? Like he's like, why are we watching this? And I was like, shall I make a list? Another funny story from my very own house. One time he wanted like a gold star for loading the dishwasher. This is several years ago, right? Because we also, and he's like, I loaded the dishwasher. And at this point, we never took the step to get two dishwashers, but there was a season where it ran twice a day. And I was looking at him, I was like, do you really not know that this is something that happens at least once a day? Like, what is, and he's just like looking at me like, I did such a good job. And I was like, what are you talking about? All right, so very good. So you're fluent in caretaking and self-sacrifice. The reason I threw those stories in there is that, the situation that you laid out, a husband who's very committed to his career and three very young children, for many, many people, including modern people, they just will tell you that's a season of life. And because I'm sure you were very busy with three young kids. And so I just wanted to throw that out there that not everybody has this awakening where they're like, somebody else should be pitching in. All right. So part of your awareness comes in and it's about sexuality, disconnection, shame, curiosity, and pleasure. None of these words come to mind when I think evangelical Christian, by the way. Just going to throw that out there. What I'm curious about is let's talk about you as a kid and as a teenager, like when you would have been going through like your own puberty and self-discovery. Let's talk a little bit about, and this will be hard because you then went through it with you parented people through adolescence. So like trying to remember back to you. Like let's talk about then, what was your concept and understanding around intimacy and sex?
I think so. I remember hearing the word sex, and it was charged differently. And it just kind of always sat with me like, what is so special or like about this word? And so I remember flipping through my kids' Bible, my children's Bible, and I couldn't find the word sex in there. Like in the dictionary, like in the back, the concordance, I couldn't find it in it. And then I go to an adult Bible and look through those, and I couldn't find the word sex in there. And I was like, I don't understand. I know that babies come from sex, but like, why are we using he laid with her or he knew her? It didn't make sense to me. And so when it came to intimacy, it felt like it was this complicated, convoluted, like really ethereal concept that I didn't understand why people were so like mysterious about.
Okay. Did you and your mom ever like? Did you and your mom talk about it? Like, were you? Did you know what to expect with your husband when you got married?
No. I mean, I did, yes, because
Okay.
I had access to movies and
Okay.
not the internet per se, but yeah, I mean, I was sheltered in some respects. So I kind of, straddled two worlds. I went to a private Christian school. I was very sheltered, but my dad was an expert in child sexual abuse allegations. And so I started working for him when I was 14, not age appropriate, and would transcribe a lot of the
The
interviews
family
that,
business, right?
yeah,
Like,
exactly. The interviews. And I was like, this is a whole weird world here. And then I was really good at soccer and I played club ball with all public school girls. And that was different than my Christian friends who were my Christian school girls, So I had this exposure to, the quote, real world in different facets, but I didn't really ever feel like I was kind of safe or fit in either.
So that's really interesting. All right, so you weren't clueless or surprised,
No.
which was so, and you were aware of the nuts and bolts, and you were ready for it. So you describe this, and we describe this choice So where did the, so I'm going to back up a second because we talk about that because one of the things that comes up with is disconnection and shame was in that list, and I would have thought that the shame would have roots in a lack of information about what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. Talk to me a little bit more about where you felt the disconnection and the shame.
So the shame came from one, my body. My
Okay.
body was always criticized. I was always too big, like I was a little bit chubby, you know, even though I'm like about to go through puberty. I had an athletic build because I was an athlete, and but I wasn't small enough. So my body was constantly criticized. My hair was like, oh, your hair's too thin, or thankfully I had good skin, but like, oh, your teeth, like all these, it was just constant of my,
Okay.
and my mom was like, I'm just trying to help. That outfit doesn't look flattering on you. And so I, on top of that, being at church and like, you know, in Christian schools, you couldn't wear certain things because then the boys would lust after you and then you would cause them to sin. And then, you know, like it just felt like we were always causing problems as women having bodies. And so I felt this. And then hitting puberty and having sexual desires and like, God, like those guys are really cute. Like I want to go talk to them, or having a boyfriend in high school and like, I want to have sex with him. Like I have that desire. And so, but I can't have that desire there. That's bad to have that desire. So there's shame there. And in order to survive the shame, you disconnect.
Yeah, so in I'll recap that and see if I get it right. You felt the pressure or the responsibility for other people's behavior when
Absolutely.
you were at church. So like the choices
Yes.
you were required to dress a certain way so that other people didn't have to take responsibility for their part in that relationship. And the ideas around intimacy and sex as an adolescent were not allowed. And so anytime you were curious about it, you followed that back up with, well, obviously something's wrong with me. This is the wrong thing for me to feel.
Yes. Yep.
That's a hard process. People do it. A lot of people live this way, but that sounds to me, as someone who didn't grow up in that culture, that sounds hard, and very confusing for sure. So you describe your choice, as telling the truth and choosing honesty. And I love those words, but I'm hoping you can tell us more about what that felt like. Who were you telling the truth? Were you talking to yourself? Were you talking to the world? Did you take out a billboard in Times Square? Like, what was this like?
Sadly, no. Are you referring to me coming out
I
as
guess, I don't know, like
polyamorous? Okay.
whatever, like this part of the story, I don't know, like, so geez, I pulled it from your pitch, so it's like about being, you know, like I enjoy, like I don't know, like did you go to church and you were like, hey, by the way, I enjoy this and I'm willing to speak, like tell me what happened.
Yeah, oh, I had. I'm trying to. Can you read what I don't remember what I wrote. I'm sorry.
I probably can for everybody that is watching.
Okay.
It'll be me clicking through the screen to read it.
If it's a pain, you don't have to, but.
No, here we go. Okay, so the moment everything shifted wasn't a dramatic rupture, but an honest reckoning. I could either keep performing the version of myself everyone expected, or risk telling the truth and losing what I'd built. Choosing honesty cracked my life open.
Yes. Okay, so I would say my marriage had gotten to a point where I was just so tired of carrying it all. I mean, it was 17 years of it and was just
Okay.
like, I can't do this anymore. Because what was happening is my husband was really checked out and didn't really see me sexually, didn't connect with me emotionally. We were good co-parents, but and business partners. And so I was like, I don't want to live the rest of my life not being like sexually connected with my partner, not being emotion like seen. And so I was like, oh, I know. I know how to save this marriage. Non-monogamy. And so I
Okay.
suggested that's what my it was. It wasn't my truth at that point yet. It was I am trying I've tried everything. I've begged for counseling. I've offered marriage courses. I've off bought you books that sat on shelves. And this felt like the only thing that would like get my needs met.
So you're sitting at home at the TV dinner tables and you say, hey, husband, let's open this marriage. How does
Oh
that
no.
go?
No. It was actually at our 17th wedding anniversary dinner at a nice restaurant
So you're in public where you can't throw
in public.
so where you can't throw an episode. So how did it go? How did he react?
Oh, horrible. Like absolutely. He was like, well, first I asked for a threesome. because I was like, well, maybe that will, like, I didn't want a threesome. I don't want one. And I thought maybe that would like buffer it a little bit. And he was like, no. And I was like, well, what about if we open the marriage? And he was like, what is wrong with you? Like, he was so disgusted. He was like, why would you ask that? I mean, he was happy and content. Like, his marriage in his mind was great. And so he was disgusted is really the word to best describe it.
So it's hard, I think it's hard for some people to imagine, and I just, accept other people's stories as being their own, and I don't, but it, so that my next question was going to be if we had asked him, and this is a terrible question, because I never should ask what other people do, but you volunteered. It's like, if we had asked him at the time, right before this, hey, is your marriage good? Are you happy with it? You think he would have said yes.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, he said that. Yeah, he was like, I was happy in our marriage. Nothing needed to change.
So the first person you tell the truth to is kind of yourself. You're like, I am going to be truthful with myself. I cannot continue the way this is
Correct.
going.
Yep.
Did you have like attraction to other people, or were you just like reaching for
Yes.
anything? Okay, so you had
No.
attraction to other people. So you were like, give me permission. I don't want to step outside the rules that we've agreed to. So I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you first.
Right, exactly.
And then I'm gonna go follow my passion. And he's like, what? No, this is not what we're
Exactly.
gonna do. Do you continue to fight about it? Like, what happens?
Yeah, we spend the next 6 months having conversations, discussions, arguments about it. I'd send him articles, podcasts, interviews, all the things about how, like, the values and the benefits of non-monogamy and why this would be helpful. And I couldn't let it go. Like, I was like, we're gonna talk about this. Like, we and our marriage continued to be strained, and it just felt like he was never gonna get on board.
And again, the words non-monogamy and evangelical Christian are not things that I would put in the same
Well, at this
paragraph.
point, yes. At this point, I had disconnected from the church. So this was, I would say, when COVID was here in Germany, they took it super serious. Like, things were really locked down. There were very strict rules. And we stopped going to church for a period because we couldn't go. And then when we could, I was like, I don't miss it. I don't want to go back. And we never did.
All right, that's very cool. All right, so you were investigating opening the marriage and you seeking other partners together and separately is what you were
Not
accused of.
together. No,
Not together.
he was very much, I have zero interest in doing that. Like, I'm monogamous. I don't want to do that.
And was he also like, and I don't want you to do it either?
Yes, he was like, I don't understand why. Like, why would you want to do? I don't get it. Like, this is not a good idea. I'm trying to remember. I was never trying to convince him to do it with me. It was like, I need to do this. Like, I need you to be okay with it. It
So
wasn't ever like us together at all.
let's
I
talk
didn't want to
about
do it
that.
with him.
Why, like, because it seems, because a lot of people don't get permission, right? Like,
Yeah.
people
They
step
do
outside
not
their
really at
marital
all. Yeah.
bounds all the time. So, like, why was it important for you to get his buy-in for this part, this change in your relationship, would you say?
Because,
Because this is
off
an
the,
interesting thing, right?
yeah.
Because if you hadn't asked for permission and stepped outside, that's where we say, money and infidelity, like we would
Yeah.
say, those are the things that break up a relationship. So that's what I'm curious about here.
I think it was like, my integrity is so important to me, and I didn't want to feel like I was doing something wrong, even though I did in a way. I saw it at the, I like really saw it as a noble attempt to like fix our marriage, and like, you should be appreciative that I'm doing this instead of filing for divorce. And yeah, I think I didn't want my marriage to end yet. Like, I really was hoping that he could just give it the stamp of approval and be like, yeah, go do what you need to do and come back and it'll be better. Yeah, I don't know. I think emotionally I couldn't hold that secret. I just
Okay. And it was the secret really, I'm just unhappy with our intimate relationship and with the way things are going, or was the
I
secret,
meant the secret to step out.
And the student step out. Okay, so does he, what happens? You fight for 6 months. Do you change his mind? Like, what happens?
Yeah, so he finally says, okay, do what you need to do. I just don't want to know about it. I said,
Okay.
okay.
And you
So I did.
did. And so I'm curious about many things at this point in this conversation, I'm going to be honest, but
That's fine.
I'm curious about, first of all, I want to say the concept of honesty here. I now understand why you were using that word, because you were being very transparent, very honest. What would the idea of successful marriage at this point, what was the dream at that point? What did you think that life, a happy life in this marriage with permission to be non-monogamous, what would that have looked like, do you think?
I saw it as my husband just staying the way he was and us kind of like, coexisting, having sex every couple of weeks, going on a date a few times a year, and then me, I don't know, meeting somebody once a month, twice a month, having a sexual encounter with them, like a friends with benefits, and then coming back home and going about my life.
All right. And is that okay? So I'm going to ask, do you know anybody who had a relationship? Did you have like any sort of awareness or representation of other people having a happy life with a similar setup? Or
No,
did you
absolutely
just,
not.
all
Nope.
right. So
I
this was
made it
just,
up.
you just made it up. Like, so, all right. So very, so then does it work? Does it work out?
So the first, okay. So in the beginning, I started dating and realized I did not enjoy the just non-monogamy.
Okay.
I really didn't like the casual hookup. Hey, good. Thanks for dinner. Thanks for a twirl, whatever in bed, and see you later or never.
Yeah.
I did not like that. And so then I did a psychedelic guided mushroom trip
Okay. All right.
and realized I was polyamorous.
Okay. All right. So I think you have everybody's attention that is listening to this. Polyamory is like a really interesting concept.
Yes.
It's very hard for people to sort of wrap their head around if they have not done some time thinking about it, had a friend done it, or done their own exploratory experience. Give people an overview. Not like, because it can get very, there's a bunch of different flavors of this,
Sure.
but just a general thing of what polyamory is in general.
So polyamory is a subset of non-monogamy. So think of non-monogamy like an umbrella, and under it are a bunch of spokes: swinging, open relationship, polyamory. And then, of course, polyamory has its own spectrum, but polyamory is really the ability to have the capacity to love or have romantic relationships with more than one person.
All right, so you realize you're like, I don't want to, like what I am is I want to have more people in my life that I love, is where you come to peace. How does your husband feel about this?
So this was like 2 months after he had given me like the approval. And at first I came to him and said, hey, I know that this is who I am. I know that I totally understand if you're not on board with that. Like at this point, I was okay with us splitting and because I knew that it was going to be a tough path for him. And he said, nope, like I have kept you small for a really long time. So at this point, he's starting to do some of his own work because he's realizing that, like, oh, maybe I haven't been the greatest husband forever. And he said, nope, like, let's figure out a way to make this work. Let's find a therapist together so we can, like, do couples therapy and then individual therapy. And he was committed to supporting me through the process.
That actually is pretty amazing.
Oh, yes, it was very amazing. I mean, at first, well, when I first told him, he like freaked out. He was like, I forgot about this part. He was like, I'm going to tell your mom. I'm going to tell my parents. Like, I'm going to tell everybody that this is why you're leaving me. And I said, okay.
Yeah,
Like,
because
I
it,
just
yeah.
was so resolute in who I was at that point. I was so done with placating to other people.
Yeah, because you actually say that it was not a single moment, but this, and I see that, but it was, it does sound like you hit a definitive time where you're like, okay, I cannot go back across this bridge.
Exactly.
Like,
Correct.
and you were like, if this is the end of the way my life, of our relationship together, I have to choose myself. All right. So very good. So you guys, I'm very impressed. So you guys go to therapy. All of you together, all the branches of therapy, you're funding all of the therapists
Mm-hmm.
in Germany as a part of this. And how does how this is like a lame question now that I have all this information, but it's also the next part of the story. How does your life change? Like, what is life like today in that it was different, say, 10 years ago?
Oh gosh. I would say there's so much more joy and freedom and passion and connection now than there ever has been in my life.
That makes sense. Okay, so think about yourself as like a 12-year-old in Christian school. If you had met your today self, who was like, we are polyamorous, what would she have had even any understanding of what that meant?
Oh, she would have been like, no, she wouldn't have. And she would have been like, we're gonna pray for you. Like,
Okay.
I think she would have found me kind of badass in a way, but also like, what are you doing? Like,
Right.
this is not, yeah,
Like
because
this network.
I wanted to be so liked by people. If you follow me on social media, you will see a lot of people do not like me because I don't apologize for who I am or who I love.
Yeah. No, well, and I think that, that makes sense. All right, so this is such an amazing story. I don't even. So let, we're gonna in a second we're gonna wrap this up. We could talk about this for hours and hours, but in a second we're gonna wrap this up. I do want to give you a chance to talk about professionally, because I think that the whole deconstructing thing, and I will talk about this more, is very interesting because you were deconstructing things, which I would guess now is a part of your discovery of who you're of the identity that you were not willing or able to see quite yet.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely.
And your search for like very young, you went into healing and therapy and sex and stuff like that. And I so now tell everybody what you do.
So I'm a therapist turned like relationship expert. I do coaching. I'm an author, and a lot of my work I work with one-on-one or with couples. I do retreats, and it really centers on love, desire, and authentic self-expression.
All right, very, very good. All right, so that is very, very cool. And you have written a book. Tell us about
I've written
that.
two books actually.
Okay, you have one that's coming out soon. That's the one I know about.
Yes. So my first one is called Not Tonight, Honey, Why Women Actually Don't Want Sex and What We Can Do About It. And that was born out of the purity culture. A lot of my clients are not interested in sex because they're super disconnected from pleasure. And then my second book is my memoir called Opened, and that's my journey from purity culture to polyamory.
Absolutely. All right. And the links for where to find the books will be in the show notes on the audio platforms on YouTube and also in the email that I send to all of the people in my email community. And this is where I invite anybody in the audience who is not signed up for the email list. That is the easiest way to get these links because I zap them to you in a very entertaining and charming email
Oh, I
newsletter. So
love that.
everyone should subscribe. All right, Courtney, are you ready for the final three questions?
Yes, please.
All right, very good. Have you ever gotten a funny reaction from people when they find out that you do relationship sex therapy?
Yes. Most of them are like, wait, what?
Very good. Is there anyone that stands out? Is there any like funny reaction where you're like, oh my God, that was ridiculous?
I think some of them are like, are you going to teach me how to like give a blowjob? Like, I mean, like first thing they say to me, and I'm like, no, like no.
In the coffee shop, this is what they ask you. That is the reason I wanted to ask that question, because I was like, I will not be surprised about what other people do. Exactly. All right. So do you, all right, so you wrote a book. You've written two books. So as a reader or somebody, you read and listen, like we kind of do the same things. What's the recent book that you've read or listened to you that you think that the audience would like?
Oh gosh. Man, I've read so many good books lately. I love The Frozen River.
Okay.
That and I don't even like historical fiction, and it was fantastic.
Very cool. I don't know that. Is that like, so I don't know that book, so I'm gonna have to look it up and I will do
Yeah.
that. All right. So today in 2026, if you have a question that you want to learn more about or do research or discover, what's the first place that you go? Do you like dial a friend? Do you go to the library? Do you look in a book? Do you do a Google search or do you use an AI tool?
I usually do a Google search unless I know. Okay, no, that's not true. My sister would probably say, "You ask me."
Okay, so
I
you
probably
ask your
ask my
sister.
sister.
There you go. That's the, I love that answer. I love that
Then
because
she'll be like, "Go look at Google."
do I look like Google? Okay,
That's what she
fair.
says. That's what she says.
All right, that's it. Courtney Boyer, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.